Hi there, and welcome back to the Connected Classroom. My name is Rusty May. I'm a school counselor by trade. I have spent the last 17 years teaching remotely, doing counseling online. And when the pandemic hit, we created this show to help teachers and students connect more effectively, both in the virtual and in the concrete classroom. And our show today is really focused on the idea of how valuable teachers are now more than ever before. And we're going to be talking to a couple of guests who will join us later, who will be able to share some insights as to what it's like to be a teacher right now in the midst of all that's going on. So thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it. Once again, I started out my career as a school counselor and went into the classrooms working with students directly and had my own caseload and did a lot of positive work in that regard. But what I realized very early on was the fact that the work that I was doing didn't always have a positive effect on the kids that I was trying to work with. So in terms of their relationships with their teachers. So I was very quickly introduced to the idea that I would be working to try to connect more effectively or help teachers connect more effectively with their students. And I created an online platform called schooltoolstv.com where I was able to, on a daily basis through 1 minute videos, create a conversation at a distance to help teachers connect more effectively. And that's grown over the years and it's been a really enjoyable process. So today we're gonna be talking about the fact that teachers are more important than ever. And my first guest who's just joining us today is Christy Borge is joining us from Montana and I'm gonna unmute her. Hey, Christy.
Hi, Rusty.
How are you?
I'm well.
How are things going in Montana?
You know, it's beautiful. It's summertime, but we are having a jump in cases right now. So it's definitely hasn't left our minds or anything. And summer's just flying by. So mid-July, and now it's time to start thinking about next year.
Well, I really appreciate you being here. I think Dawn Larson's going to join us as well in a couple of minutes. So we're really just talking today about the importance of teachers. And you know, I think over the last few weeks and months as I've been doing the show, what's become apparent to me is that a teacher's role is so much more than what we thought it was. And I know that you work in a very unique situation in one of the small schools in Montana, but I think you may be able to articulate that. Have you noticed kind of the opinion of teachers has changed over that period of time?
Well, I definitely think there's a general sentiment from parents of how do you do that with, you know, all these different grade levels and this
many things,
and I can't, you know, get my child to do half of this. And so I definitely think that parents who already appreciated teachers appreciate them even more. And then I just think society as a whole is kind of realizing just the vital role that teachers play in the lives of children. And just almost like that system that we have in place. And then also just the admiration for teachers of, you know, within the course of 2 to 3 days, really a week for some, but totally having to rethink how they deliver education. So there's definitely some appreciation, but I also feel a lot of pressure towards teachers right now as well, as schools are discussing if and how to reopen in the fall. I think there's a lot of uncertainty and parents are coming from a place of how am I going to work and earn an income as well as manage my child's education if they do have to be at home partially. So I definitely feel for parents. There's a big burden on them and they are stressed. And I do think, especially teachers who are parents that I know, that is really, you know, there's a lot of questions being raised. But I do agree. I think that teachers right now are just really seen as a vital workforce.
Yeah, I mean, I think once we decide and when we decide that reopening is part of it, then teachers become the next line of defense like the medical community has been for the first part of this, where we've gone out and, you know, in England, for example, every night at 6 o'clock, people walk out of their house and they applaud for the for the medical workers. And in France, the medical workers just recently got the largest pay raise historically that's ever happened for a public association, with the acknowledgement of the work that they're doing right now. But what you mentioned, I think, and I'm not sure that it's being articulated, and that's one of my concerns. I'm going to show some slides here in a minute to talk a little bit more about trying to get the teachers' voices included. But what I think is happening is that people are realizing that it's so much more than just education, right? So we have the education component, but we also have the absolute mandatory need, especially in the United States, where we don't have any other options that are public, of a place for a child to go so a parent can work. And so these two opposing forces are at loggerheads right now. And we have two groups of people who desperately need, schools need to open. I understand all the arguments about the children's mental health. I'm noticing it in my own children who are 4 and 5. Just their, almost malaise about not being able to connect with kids. And I get all of that, but then it puts the teacher in risk, and especially a teacher who has a young child or who is going in to a school and then has older parents or has things like that. So I think that's a real significant part of this as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I know I actually just taught summer camp, a science camp outdoors for a week this last week with, I had 12 kids age going into first through third grade that I hadn't met before. I've taught this camp before, but I'd, get new students every year for the camp. It's in a different town in which I teach. And I couldn't help but notice just the, there are a lot of emotions from these kids who, I know that this camp was the first time they'd really actually been in an instructional type of setting since their schools had closed. And I don't know if it was just this particular group or if this is a pattern that I'll see as I teach more camps, but the kids, you could tell, were stressed. They had anxiety. Some, were not used to being separated from their parents after 4 months of their parents working from home.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And just some of the basic procedural things that you would expect them to be able to do, like, writing their names and those kinds of things, were not there for some of them. And it was kind of an eye-opener to me to just see some kids who really have been at home with their parents for 4 months and haven't had a chance to interact socially or to be in that learning environment. And it's almost like there's some regression there. And so I think not only are we worrying about that, the academics, I think what first comes is that social emotional health. And so we definitely have our work cut out for us in terms of figuring out how to support the kids emotionally, as well as secondary thinking about the academics that they've missed, and then doing so safely for our own health and our own safety.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest considerations that's out there right now. Part of the learning revolution, there's a number of shows like mine who have a weekly presence, and we got together on a conference call last week, and they were talking about a particular district that was outside of New Jersey, predominantly white, predominantly higher, mostly high economic situations and so forth. And 80% of the parents wanted their students to come back, and they wanted them to be back in the classroom environment. And it was interesting when you look at that based on the demographics of who's actually being affected by the virus and that. But they, you're seeing now protests around the country about things like masks. You're seeing protests about people wanting their kids back in school, demanding their kids back in school, more so for the social emotional part and the well-being of the child as much as anything. Teddy G is joining us. Teddy's been on the show a number of times, and I'm going to unmute you as well, Teddy. I hope you'll join our conversation today. I know you're working probably, but if you can jump in, it's good to see you.
Thanks,
Teddy. He works in higher education, and I know he's seeing it in his older kids as well. Teddy, Christy was just talking about some of the issues with a summer camp that she was working where she noticed not only regression in the learning curve, but also some significant anxiety with kids coming in. Are you guys doing anything with students during the summer where you're noticing some of the tendencies with the older kids?
At the moment, no, we're not working with students because the semester did end in May, but we are contacting them in terms of getting them prepared for the fall semester. So I can't really indulge into anxiety or the students' well-being, but we're more concerned about preparing for the fall at the moment.
Do you have a sense of where you guys are going to go? Are you going to go all online, or are you going to go in the classroom?
It really depends on Governor Cuomo at the moment. As of, I want to say Tuesday, I did hear that Los Angeles, San Diego, and the city of Atlanta are going remotely. So I guess depending on how the numbers go, Cuomo did mention unless you're in phase four that you can't open schools. He also had mentioned the infection rate is above a certain percentile that you might have to shut down. So it's possible you could reopen and have students come in campus, but as soon as there's a spike, we might have to just go back remotely. I personally think going remotely is the best option because we are forgetting, you know, the other population of folks who have to clean, folks who are teaching. And even as a union member, you're forgetting that folks have kids. If their kids are going remotely, who's taking care of them while they have to work? So there's a lot of things that we have to factor before we come to a full decision. But at the moment, we do plan on having students, but things could change depending on what Cuomo does say.
Well, you're also working with kids over the age of 18, and so the remote option is a little bit different. The digital divide that we're noticing with lower economic situations and not having as much access and so forth. But Christy, in your situation where you're working with younger kids, what was your ability to connect with them in the spring in terms of being able to deal with them remotely, especially because you're in a somewhat remote area to begin with, but also just the technology aspect? How did it go with the young kids?
You know, the kids were super resilient. I was fortunate in that I had already used and practiced a lot of the technology that I needed to teach remotely. So for example, I had already been using Seesaw in my classroom. So even my first grader knew how to log on and upload work. I was using a math and reading computer program as part of my rotation model because I teach multi-grades. And so I was able to just use that. So for me, it was really fortunate in that I already had students doing some routines and using some tools that we had used in the classroom before. So just where I ran into trouble is if I tried to throw a new program at them or, if a website login wasn't working. Our phone company out here was super fortunate or super generous in that they offered to provide internet for free for any families who didn't already have internet. And then I had enough iPads for each student. So I was able to send home devices with the students. And so the access was great. I was lucky to have parents who were, willing to work. It definitely took a learning curve in figuring out how much work to assign. And the parents who were able to get into a routine mentioned that they had a lot of success. Whereas if they were having trouble getting started or getting their child up in the morning and that kind of thing, there was definitely some stress there for those parents. But I would say having some of these programs that the students were already using and then having them use those programs as part of their remote learning was my biggest success because I didn't have to, the students could do them on their own without the parents having to be there every minute to guide them.
Yeah, and I think we're going to find, and we're finding it already, we've heard from a number of people who have been on the show in the last few weeks who have talked about there's a percentage of students who are really thriving in this environment. They really enjoy it much more. They don't, probably not in your situation where the community is so much smaller, but in larger communities and larger schools where we're noticing kids who aren't as outspoken in class, the interaction with other kids isn't particularly their favorite thing, especially the social aspect of it. And working at their own pace and being able to go outside when they're finished with their work and being able to finish their work earlier in the day and doing 2 or 3 hours. So we are seeing some real positive successes like that have come out of this. Teddy, are you noticing stuff as well from your perspective, some of the online learning stuff that has really been very positive in what you're doing?
I think what you mentioned earlier about the students who don't like to speak in class feel more comfortable remotely, being able to work at their own pace, and I guess not have kids make fun of them or, for better words, not ridicule them when they may say a wrong answer or how they dress. So those students would definitely do better remotely. But overall, you know, back to what you had mentioned weeks ago about, you know, having these social gatherings where you can play with students and interact with them, you lose that touch. And unlike higher education, where students can go to the bars and can meet in the library, you know, for kids K through 12, you know, just being able to play and read and do things together, that is going to be a change that we have to see how that affects both students who are afraid to speak in class versus students who just know, okay, I know what I have to do. I'm not afraid to speak my mind. I know I can excel whether in class or remotely.
Well, I think this could create a hybrid model that's something, you know, could expand the home learning situation depending on the situation of the student, you know, the personality of the student. But I wonder then if it becomes an issue of where it just becomes so much more difficult for the teacher. And before, I was going to ask Sharmila, if you're there, if you want me to unmute you, I'd love to hear from you as well. We're having an intimate conversation today, so please join us if you'd like. I'll be happy to unmute you. If you don't want to, that's fine as well, but we'd like to hear from you.
Yes.
Sharmila, do you want to jump in real quick?
Yes, please. Yes, I'm from Mumbai, India.
Okay.
And we have gone online since March. That's the beginning of our new year. And we are infant schools, so the children are in the age group of 5 and 7.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, we are developing connecting classrooms by going asynchronous. We are introducing everything using assignments on Google Classroom and keeping in mind the mental health as our priority, because slowly as the fatigue sets in, the children are going to resist more and more if we do not make learning interesting. So we have been taking all kinds of precautions from the word go, and we are trying our best to make it easier by balancing, you know, digital, non-digital screen time, plus taking a survey with parents, giving one-on-one meetings if they face any difficulties. Children have faced issues such as sometimes they're a little bit fearful of, you know, the lockdown, or sometimes they're not able to sleep properly. So we have had counseling sessions with our counselor. So we are taking all precautions. So is there anything you want me to say in particular?
No, I appreciate you joining us. Are you a teacher or are you the administrator of the school?
I'm the administrator. I'm heading the school. I'm the principal of the school.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being with us today. Are you doing anything to help? And in the United States, and so Christy and I, we've worked together for a couple of years, and one of the things that we focus on, especially in the United States, is the healthy educational relationship between students and teachers. And so our focus is about the idea that it needs to be more about the student, and that relationship between teacher and student is really paramount for education to be successful. Is that a similar thought process in India?
Definitely, because first we work towards building trust, because when we went online, we had parents suddenly in the scene. It's not just between the teacher and the students anymore, but the parents are also a part of it. Parents are the ones who are going to transfer the teaching from a teaching video or the resources that we share. So the first step was to build empathy and trust. So we work towards that, so that we could give them the critical feedback that they need on a daily basis. So Google Classroom has been very, very important for us, because we are able to communicate with parents on a daily basis, giving them feedback on the work submitted, plus understanding any difficulties. So the relationship between the teacher and the parents have been quite fruitful. And we do share a lot of praise and good comments. And so we're trying to balance it out.
What kind of participation rate are you getting with your families?
With our families, yes. So in summer, our summer already, it got over in May. That's the time we get a summer break. So we did a summer collaborative project on Animal Kingdom, where the school shared Google Slides with the parents, and then we encouraged them to form groups of five, and those five children worked on one presentation, you know, where the children inserted their videos and audio clips and all the pictures. So it really worked out well. We also have value education lessons online live. Like I said, we are asynchronous mostly, but music and storytelling is something that we do live because we need to have some kind of interaction with students. So through those lessons, we try to connect with the families. We have once a week meetings with the parents. The teachers meet up with parents once a week to understand their difficulties. So, you know, these are different things that we are doing so that the parent-teacher relationship builds.
Great. Hey, Christy, are you doing anything specifically this summer to stay in touch with your parents or to stay in touch with your families? I know in your situation, it's so unique because you have the same kids year after year in a small school situation, and those relationships are developed. But one of the things that a number of our guests have mentioned and what they're concerned about is it was one thing to go starting in March after you'd had almost 7 or 8 months with your students and you had created relationships with them. And then going into the fall, if we either start remotely or we go remotely relatively quickly, that's going to be difficult. Is there anything different that you're doing this summer to stay connected with your families?
Yeah, so for the month of June, I was actually able to do a little summer program with my students, and it was optional, but I had all the families participate whose children definitely needed that academic support. So I had, I think, like five of my six families. And so what I did was I set up a time, I did it 2 days a week, and I'd have each student or each family, if there were siblings, come for 2 hours. And I would meet with the student outside on the basketball court, and I would wear a mask. I would do some of the math content that we didn't get to do in person, but kind of tried to make it a more fun, you know, environment, less stringent than it would be if they were coming to school for a lesson. But I got to read with them, do some phonics. We did, you know, hopscotch word ladders out on the pavement and played math games. And so just that 2 hours for 4 weeks in June. And because I have, you know, families and such few students, I was able to do that with individual families and students on their own so that I had, you know, just one student or one family at a time. And really, I was focusing on, you know, building those relationships and getting to see them in person and getting them to, you know, just come back to school. And they just loved it. You know, I asked the parents, you know, was it hard to get your child here this morning, come into school in summer? And, you know, no, they wanted to come back and to see me and just to get to have that familiarity, because I think they just really they love their little school and they have ownership over it because they come back to it every year. And so they really looked forward to it. And then in August, at least a week before school starts, depending on what happens, I'll do something similar where I'll have them come one at a time. And depending on what our school decides, it might be spending that time, again, teaching them how to use the technology and that kind of thing, but also just spending that quality time one-on-one and getting to kind of rebuild those relationships so that when I am asking them to do any type of learning, there's that buy-in there.
Teddy, are you guys doing anything right now at the higher education level to stay in contact with your students? I know you mentioned you didn't really have a sense of what they were doing. I guess it feels different when you have 18 to 25-year-olds running around, and like you said, they can still go out and they can do other things and connect in other ways. But are you guys doing anything to stay in touch with them during the summer?
Yeah, initially when we had the lockdown, I just wrote to all my students, you know, hope you're doing well. If you need any help, if you have any questions, concerns, reach out to me via email. And a handful of students have taken that into consideration, and we've met either through Zoom or Google Hangout. And through that, I've heard students, you know, express their frustration about not having a job, the uncertainty about the fall semester, about graduation, about not having a job. So I've used that time to pretty much help them, you know, find jobs, navigate through, you know, resume building, interviews, just so they have a better idea of what to embrace down the road. And, you know, trying to help them expand their skills, so whether it be through LinkedIn Learning, through YouTube, any way they can use the idle time and make it into a positive, I've tried to use that. But now that I'm actually back at work, only for half a day, so I work from 8 to 4, but I spend the first 4 hours of my day in the library flagging books as part of a project, and the other 4 hours I use to attend webinars, meet with students. But I have kept in touch with most of my students for the most part. I'm hoping, you know, depending on what direction we go for the fall semester, I want to continue to let them know, hey, you know, we're in uncertain times right now, but you have to really keep steadfast with your plans. Just because we're in a pandemic doesn't mean that you can't go to grad school, you can't get a job. There are opportunities available out there, but you really have to put your foot down and say, well, if I'm going to graduate in 2022, what do I need to do now to make myself the best applicant possible?
Well, building off that, and I would ask all three of you this question, what do you think the skills are that we should be teaching kids right now that are the most important? I mean, obviously, let's go ahead and put academics aside. But Shamila, for example, in India right now, what do you think are the top two or three skills that kids need to have right now in order to deal with, whether they're 5 or 7 years old or 15 and 17 years old, what are the things that we need to be teaching them right now that are going to help them manage this? Because this is going to be going on for years to come, either the pandemic itself or the economic reality of what the pandemic has created. So in India, what are you thinking are the most important things to be teaching kids right now?
I would say resilience. And yes, and empathy, because these two are going to take them much ahead if they are resilient to the change that they're experiencing, which is huge. Because I feel that children, young or little older, they're experiencing everything in these 4 months, what they would have otherwise taken 10 years to experience. Mm-hmm. So it's coming, everything is coming in one go at them, and they are understanding a lot of it suddenly. So I think to build resilience is what we need to train them in. There are many ways to do it for younger children, probably stories and some hands-on experiences, some tasks which can be allotted to them. And of course, parents play a huge role in how they also present themselves in a particular household, right? And also empathy, understanding each other, doing simple acts of kindness, showing empathy towards small things in life, I think will support, they will support each other, you know, being appreciated. Yes.
I think it's an excellent answer. And I think it's one of the concerns that I have in looking at the United States right now, where we have the anti-mask movement, where people are very, very specific that they do not want to participate. It's personal freedom. And then the idea becomes whether it's more important to be personal freedom as opposed to the, you know, the reality of what could happen around you with that personal freedom. And it's a very difficult discussion because, you know, our country obviously is built on the idea of personal freedom. And I understand the arguments from both points of view, but the ability to see someone else's point of view, or the ability to understand what someone else is feeling or could be feeling is a very important thing. You mentioned there are several ways to do it. Do you have any? I know from a parenting perspective, I know for me, it's like I'm constantly telling my son and daughter that it's okay to make mistakes. And I constantly tell him, daddy makes mistakes all the time, which I do. I drop things or whatever. And then the way that I respond to making mistakes is one of the things that I focus on. Do you have things that you guys try to focus on in the school to build resilience in your kids?
Yes, definitely. I mean, like I said, we have value education lessons. We do share articles with parents, because I think as a community, I would like to say one thing here is, if we are looking at personal freedom, personal freedom can be effective only if it's part of the community, mm-hmm. you know, within the community, because we are part of a community. And if we do not give and take, then your personal freedom has no meaning. And in order to respect your personal freedom, first you need to respect others. And we are here because of others. So that's one thing. And this is what we can definitely teach students. For example, what we have done recently is, as a school, we have connected with one orphanage where children between the age groups of 6 to 10, we have a tie-up. So it works like a pen pal, you know. So our children need to connect with someone outside of their home and someone whom they can empathize with and understand better. So we are encouraging our students, or rather parents, to write on behalf of our little children to a child and communicate with the child via email. So a simple thing such as this, the child will get to know another child from an orphanage and will understand what kind of activities that child does, or what are the things that child has or does not have, and the privileges that our students experience. So there is a lot of give and take over here. So that's the new program. We call it a social buddy program. And we are quite happy with it because we've shared a certain number of students with each class and they then communicate with them. So they are building these kind of empathetic connections outside of their homes, because it's already been 4 months and it's a lot to take just the family, and they need a lot more to come in from outside, which is not happening. So we need to bring outside community into their homes online.
Well, that's excellent. And I agree with you 100% on personal freedom as being a community-based initiative. And I think now more than ever, we need to realize that the community is now worldwide. You know, there's not, yeah. I mean, we saw how fast this thing spread. So the idea that we're separated by borders or we're separated by anything else, I mean, it's an entire world that we all need to understand that it's a connected unit. And with nationalism and a lot of other things that are pushing it at different political movements and so forth. And the idea is to kind of go inside and to kind of protect yourself. But something like this makes it obvious that it's that's very difficult to do. Christy, on your side, in terms of teaching kids, what do you think the most, like for this year, when you get back in a classroom or you get back together with your kids, what's your focus going to be? Did I lose? Oh, you're muted. Sorry, I don't know how we muted you.
Okay.
There you are.
So I loved what Sharmila talked about with corresponding with other kids who are outside of their own home, because that is a huge part for me, is just that communication piece and using accountable talk. Already I've had kids come, you know, and I'm wearing my mask at the summer program, and my mom thinks wearing a mask is going to make you more sick, and I don't think you should be wearing a mask. And so I deal with that with my families. There's a lot of strong opinions, and so definitely focusing on how to use facts and to support your claims, how to just form an opinion, and then also how to respectfully disagree with others, even at a really young age. And then again, just being able for the kids to identify their feelings and why they're feeling that way. Like, I think the kids are feeling stress and they understand that the world is different, but they don't really understand what really is going on. And so teaching them appropriate ways to cope and practicing that is really huge in terms of them identifying the feelings that they're feeling. And instead of, you know, acting out in anger or, you know, acting out physically, teaching them ways that they can really get to the bottom of how they're feeling, why they're feeling, and then what to do about it. Because I think families in general are stressed and on edge, and that is going to transfer to the children if it hasn't already. And so modeling for the students how to say, yeah, I'm feeling stressed because I haven't gotten to see my family as much, or and so to deal with that, I'm going for walks, and I'm, you know, spending time with my pets. And the kids don't understand why they can't play on their sports teams and why they can't go see grandma. And I mean, they know, oh yeah, coronavirus, but they don't really understand, at least my younger students, you know, 6, 7, 8 year olds. And so just giving them an outlet that's appropriate, and then teaching them how to talk about things that maybe they've heard their parents say, but also doing so in a way that lets them do their own critical thinking about things, because kids really care about what's just and what's fair. And so for me, it's trying to diplomatically share information without going against or making their parents seem like they're wrong. That's a delicate balance that we have to play as teachers without getting political. And so that's something I'm always having to do, is show the kids that even if what I'm doing is different from what maybe their parent has said at home about various political topics that are in the limelight right now, and being okay with that and still being friends and still getting along because we're communicating respectfully.
Well, I think it's always been one of the tenets of the work that I've done, is the bifurcation of existence, and saying to students that when you're in school, there's a different set of rules, and what you do at home and what your parents say and do and so forth. Like, because I know forever there were, you know, especially when I was growing up, if you got bullied at school, you go home and tell your dad says, well, you need to hit the kid, right? You got to punch him in the face. You got to stand up for yourself. And that was one of the key characteristics of trying to deal with a bully. And I get the merit of that, but we also have to explain that that's not going to work in our situation. And so trying to bifurcate that existence is a really important thing. And what I heard you saying in terms of coping strategies and being able to articulate their feelings and so forth, so that it doesn't end up being something that comes out in a way that's hurting them or hurting someone else, is a real critical thing. Teddy, I was going to ask you about, I know that you had mentioned that you're somewhat concerned about in-face in having classes in person in the fall, and some of your coworkers as well. Has there been any further discussion about how your staff is feeling in terms of having the kids come back in person?
Well, back to what Christy said, the whole face mask thing, I think, bothers me the most. It's become a political thing, right? Where, okay, if someone says you don't have to wear it, I'm not going to wear it. And if Cuomo says you have to wear it, then you should wear it. And based on what we've got in terms of our restart plan, we have to wear it. My biggest concern outside the face mask is just the testing. Where I live, it's a very rural area. It's 30 minutes from Rochester, which is a city in New York, in upstate New York. And there's not much testing. And if there is testing, it's not free. So we come to a point where, okay, if you're telling me I have to get tested 3 days before the start of the semester, and I have to pay out of pocket to get tested, how many folks are going to do the same thing? And then back to when school does reopen, you're trying to tell me that you want kids, that we're going to trust kids, that they're not going to have social gatherings who live off campus. Those who live on campus aren't going to sneak friends in. And then when there's a cluster, an outbreak, then we have to shut the campus down. That's the biggest concern that I'm having, you know, with the face covering as well. And those questions have not been answered, you know, through my union, just through campus in general. But as a staff with the library, we decided that, you know, librarians are going to do their lessons remotely. And those who have to come to campus will come to campus. We're still going to practice social distancing. We're still going to have a face covering. But everything really comes down to the students. You know, within the past several weeks, we've seen cases in different campuses where we've seen clusters of students, and everything comes back to, well, the students are partying, students are doing X, Y, and Z, not taking it seriously. And, you know, we are seeing cases where kids, you know, K-12 are getting infected, and unfortunately, some of them are dying. And the virus isn't going anywhere anytime soon. If someone lives in New York and goes to a hotspot, let's say Arizona, Texas, California, and comes back, Now you're being told to self-quarantine for 2 weeks. If you don't abide by that and decide to go into the public without your face covering and infect someone else, and they do some sort of contact tracing, and we find out, hey, this person did travel to a hotspot and then came back, these are all problems that we have to address as a whole, because yes, people will travel to see family. People will travel to attend a conference. People will travel to do X, Y, Z. But if you don't do contact tracing, if you don't make the guidelines stricter, an outbreak will happen. And it's not a matter of, you know, if, but a matter of when.
Well, I think, and I appreciate what you're saying, but I think everything that I'm reading now is leading me to think that even a vaccine may not be completely effective, because this may turn out to become part of the flu. It could be the kind of thing that evolves on a yearly basis. And so like the flu shot every year, it has certain elements in it to protect you against certain kinds of things, but it's not guaranteed that this is going to happen. And so going forward, the idea of what Sharmila talked about in terms of the community taking responsibility for each other, I think that is really an interesting part of this right now, where we're seeing people who are, you know, they're struggling with that. And obviously, if you're 18 to 22, I couldn't imagine being 18 to 22 year old right now and not wanting to go out and see people and go to, you know, parties and do those kinds of things. That doesn't really exist for me as a 57 year old man, but I could see it as a 22 year old being completely all in. And I think they think they're invincible as well. So, you know, there's a sense of that, but not really understanding the larger impact of that. Sharmila, what are the current guidelines? Oh, you're muted as well. I don't know what happened. Maybe you're not there anymore. I was going to wonder if you wanted to share what the current guidelines in India were in terms of face masks and social distancing and so forth.
Yes, face masks and social distancing is very much there. We do not probably, there are people who are going out probably without a mask or not really distancing themselves. But yes, I mean, the government is definitely rolling out guidelines every now and then. We still have some positive cases being reported. Mumbai being a metropolitan big city, we have people, its density of population is huge. It's a very crowded city. So naturally social distancing becomes important. But what we are trying to understand here is all the essentials are working. I mean, there is no shortage of food or the basic essentials. You know, sitting at home, we are getting everything at our doorstep. But the shops are open for economic reasons and they are not open for fun and games. So obviously theaters and malls are closed, and masks are definitely a big yes, and social distancing too. I mean, even when we make a call, whether on our cell or on a landline, we always get this recorded message, you know, how important it is to wear a mask or...
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So before the person picks up, we get to hear this. So I think there is enough effort, but the people have to step into it and understand it. Not everybody does, but I think most of us do. And eventually, a virus is here to stay. I don't think we are going to go back to school for next probably 4 to 6 months. I'm not sure when. But whatever is possible is being done. So
if we can finish on that, we're going to end up the show here in a minute or two. But from each one of you, just kind of a positive thing, something that you think, you know, there's going to be positives that come out of this. There's going to be changes. I'm already seeing it. I've seen it. Even being a father, you know, being able to be with my kids for 4 months in that situation, it was difficult, but I mean, I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I'm wondering what you think some of the positives or a positive that's come out of this for you so far, that's something that you'd like to share with the audience. Who we have a lot of people that watch these recordings after the fact. So Christy, something that's positive that we can leave our listeners with?
Sure. So I think for me as a teacher, a positive aspect was that having the students offsite allowed me to have a little bit more time to develop some really meaningful lessons that I normally wouldn't have time to develop for instance, in social studies, I was able to get a little bit more in depth and plan some things out of the book that I normally wouldn't have had time to plan. And then as far as the students go, I think it allowed them to use choice a lot and to move at their own pace. And when you had mentioned earlier about students who could work and they're working to get things done, I have a 7-year-old, and her motivating factor to get her schoolwork done was so that she could go out and help dad on the ranch. And I'd get to see her. I've seen her several times this summer out riding cattle. And so it's fun to get to see a kind of a snapshot of their lives at home when you're on Zoom, and just seeing what really motivates them to get, you know, to do their schoolwork. And so then now I can kind of tie some of those themes in, you know, in future years with those students. So being able to create some meaningful instruction, just having a little bit more prep time, and then also seeing what really truly is motivating the kids.
Nice. Sharmila, do you have some positives to send our listeners off with?
Yes, plenty. As teachers, we have really grown as a community because we have battled our way through, and we've come up triumphant because we kind of, I would say, critical thinking and problem solving. The teachers have excelled in those skills because we've come up with so many solutions to the problems that we faced. So it has been a roller coaster ride. A lot has taken shape in past 4 months, and I think it's going to help us in future too. And one more thing I would just like to say is that I think each one of us must work towards building our positive communication with each other. Even media, I would say, is very, very negative at times. Yes. So one must focus on positivity of verbal as well as non-verbal communication is what we need to focus on as we go ahead.
I agree. I agree very much. Gandhi would be very happy with that as well, I would imagine. And thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Teddy, any positives to send us off with?
Yes. When it comes to this uncertain time, I think the resources that we have at our disposal online, it's definitely helped me personally. And I would recommend anyone who's a professional, who's a student, you know, to take advantage of the resources online. I know personally, prior to the pandemic, I did not use Learning Revolution at all. And now I'm on it pretty much every day. And, you know, having you and, you know, what you've done with it, and just having other webinars and other guests, has definitely helped me as a professional, just seeing the resources that people are sharing. If you can find any community of that sort, please utilize it, because we don't know how long this is going to last. But for the time being, you know, find people who can inspire you, who can encourage you, who can uplift you to do better.
Thank you, sir. And I appreciate you being here again this week. Thank you, Christy, for being here. Sharmila, I wish I'd have gotten that right. I hope I did. My note is that we can't reopen without teachers. And I don't care what anyone says, but whether or not they understand it, that what the work that the teachers are doing, the work that you educators are doing, is absolutely vital. And we're understanding that more and more, not only from the education perspective, but from the social perspective to allow work to continue, and also from the frontline perspective. Christy and I had a situation that we worked on earlier in the year where we had a student who was negatively affected by this, and it was something that we could, you know, try to get in there and work on together, because Christy noticed it, or a fellow teacher had noticed that there was something going on. And that doesn't happen when kids are not with us, and we need to stay connected. And whatever happens going forward, connection before content, because I will take the educational challenges, we can catch up, but I'm concerned about the mental health part of this. And I'm concerned about the fact that if we don't help kids feel connected and we don't give them a place where they can connect with others, that this will be a much more difficult challenge going forward than just trying to catch up academically. So thank you all for being with us here today. Thank you for all you do for the kids in your care. And I look forward to seeing you next time on the Connected Classroom. Have a great day.